Like many of you, I'm concerned about the advance and rapid pace of development of artificial intelligence. Not so much about how it hallucinates and how it's like fancy autocomplete, but the long-term implications of humanity creating a technology that is effectively smarter than us. Now, maybe we won't do it, but if we did, there are consequences and downsides. And you know, it's always really important to think about how the technology that you're developing could have downsides. And so my guest today is Dr. Roman Yemenpolsky. He's the director of cybersecurity at the University of Louisville, and he's one of the signatures of the Pause AI movement, sort of people who think that we should slow down, stop the training of the next generation of large language models, and just work more on safety to figure out how we can better handle this technology before we rush headlong into an unknown future. Now, I'm going to warn my regular audience here that this conversation is mostly about artificial intelligence and safety and very little about space and the Fermi paradox and that kind of stuff. We do bring those topics up, but it's very short and mostly we're talking about safety. We do talk about the simulation hypothesis near the end of the episode, if that's something that you're interested in. But, you know, if you're one of my regular listeners and, you know, you are waiting to only hear about space, it's okay to skip this interview. But for those of you who are mildly interested and want to hear my perspective, as well as Dr. Yemenpolsky's thoughts on artificial intelligence, I highly recommend you listen to this interview. I think you'll get a lot out of it. All right, enjoy this interview. Roman, you've been thinking about the rise of artificial intelligence for a long time. You've written books and papers on the subject. Was the actual rubber hits the road sort of arrival of large language models and the transformer architecture still kind of bracing and surprising to you when it did arrive?
Yeah, we were expecting another 20 years of kind of slow improvement, not this paradigm shift. And we were proportionately not doing as much work as we should have had. We had, you know, top people in the field writing Harry Potter fiction instead of really concentrating on what needs to be done, given the 10-year head start. So,
and I mean, I know that various people in the AI safety movement had started to address some of the larger concerns 20 years ago. You know, I've been talking on various forums about what the potential threat was, but it was all very theoretical. You know, like when the unicorns show up, then we might have to deal with their horns. But suddenly, here we are, and although clearly the current state of artificial intelligence is laughable, I mean, it is not the kind of thing that you're going to be scared of, it feels transformational. It really feels like there's something changing and going on now. Do you feel like now those people who were writing Harry Potter fan fiction are starting to switch over to considering safety?
Well, that was an inside joke, so don't use that example. But I don't think the state of AI is laughable. I think it's already smarter than an average human in most domains. The model we just released yesterday is outperforming, standard computer science programmers, mathematicians, science PhD students. That's not something you laugh about. And in terms of safety, they found that the model already pretends to be aligned with human values. So it tries to deceive you on purpose, tries to hack out of its environment. So it's pretty serious already.
Well, I mean, maybe laughable is not the right term, but it feels like very quickly when you interact with one of these large language models, even the one that was released yesterday, the new sort of thinking model provided by OpenAI, you clearly reach its limitations where the text, the things that it writes is redundant. It likes to use the word delve a lot. And yet, as you said, yesterday I was asking it to code up small applications that I could use to help organize my life. And it just like, no problem, here you go. Is that what you wanted? I'm like, that's exactly what I wanted. And that's magic, feels like. And so I think, this sort of duality, I think, is causing people to feel more not as concerned as maybe they should be. Because it is sort of like, on the one hand, feels like it's magic, as you said, outperforms PhD students on tests. And then on the other hand, it only finally learned to count the number of R's in strawberry. So, you know, that feels, you know, and so do you, and again, it's sort of, it's like, you know, you've been concerned about this all along, but do you think that a lot of your contemporaries are starting to take it seriously now or not?
So there is definitely a lot more people who think it's something to look at. Then we survey machine learning researchers. There is a large percentage who think it's very serious, definitely going to be more serious in the future. But some are still kind of calling it, you know, glorified statistics and dismissing any possibility of danger. So that's normal. A lot of these people live in a bubble. They're used to working with the smartest people in the world, and so they expect the system to be at least Einstein level before they consider it as important. They forget what average people are like. They never have to deal with, you know, normal human beings for whom many of those things, write a program, write a poem, are not something they are capable of at all.
Yeah, totally. So I want to talk about, like, I think for my audience, you know, they're very knowledgeable about astronomy, space topics, and so I don't need to give them a lot of preparation. But I think that for a lot of people, when they first start to encounter these ideas of artificial intelligence and the possible concerns that safety people have, there are a bunch of sort of instinctual responses to that. And I hear even experts make these kinds of arguments, and I want to debunk them. The first one is that we can align this technology relatively easily. What do you say to people? I mean, there's a whole group of people who just say, well, you just got to make sure that the AI does what you want, and then everything will be fine, right? Then you get AI heaven.
I'm surprised how established this concept of alignment is, despite not even being defined as something meaningful. We don't know who you're aligning with. Is it the programmer? Is it the owner? Is it you know, all the Americans? Is it 8 billion humans? Is it humans and squirrels combined? So we don't know who the target of alignment is. We don't know how we get all 8 billion of them to agree on any values. We definitely don't agree politically. We don't agree socially, religiously. There is a lot of divide. The values we do agree on change. They're not static, they're dynamic. And if we figured out something we agreed on and it was static, we don't know how to program it in. So there is definitely a lot of problems with that solution.
An analogy that I like to think of is that if you gave people a button, and if they pressed the button, it would destroy the Earth, and you handed that out to 8 billion people, how long till the button gets pressed?
It's been pressed already. It's too late.
Yeah. I mean, I handed them out. I've already started handing them out, and it's already been pressed. And that is the equivalent, I think, where if you say, okay, you hand the power of an artificial superintelligence to every human being on Earth to some degree, to some level, and then they use it for what they consider to be their purpose, their alignment, those alignments are going to overlap. They're going to clash. They're going to override one another. And so, like, at the heart of it, do you think that alignment is even a solvable problem at all?
I don't think it's even meaningful in terms of defining what you're trying to accomplish. As I said, we don't have a specific set of things we're aligning with. We don't have a source for where those values would come from because we haven't decided what agents are the important ones. So right now, models are aligned with the corporation. Then I ask the model to do something for me. Half the time it tells me no. I don't want to do it for you. So it's not aligned with me. I know that much. So it doesn't seem like it's an actual scientific path forward solution. It sounds good, but it will do what we want. If you're not defining your terms, you can say it will do good things or it will make things better. None of those things are defined. Nothing you can program in C or C++ or anything.
Right. And I mean, there was a recent conversation that you had on Doom Debates, and, you know, one of the big conversations about this was this idea of alignment that you can make the world better, that we can approach AI heaven, we can try and avoid the AI hell. And I think for most people, they talk in these very vague terms about, okay, we want things to be better. As you say, we want to make more money and be more healthy maybe and have better relationships or I don't know. And yet even that is very undefined. And so I sort of go back, like you talk about like the terms, but let's say that we get really, you know, the philosophers come in and we sit down and we hammer out, you know, as if you were going to try and get three wishes from a genie or from a monkey's paw. Do you think there's any possible framework that you could, that people could agree on largely to say, okay, that's, we want that. This is our idea of AI heaven.
I think even if it was, in many cases, if you have this magical powers, then it takes away all meaning from your life. If anything you ever wanted, you get immediately without working for it, without trying to get there, then what's the point? Why do I need you? The system can do it without you. What are you contributing to this environment, to this equation? What can you contribute to superintelligence?
Yeah. I'm not sure for me that, I mean, that isn't that compelling of a, I mean, I think that we will always find purpose and we can kind of carve out what we want. You look at Star Trek and they have the holodeck and they can go and have fun. And yeah, you could, you know, people ask me like, why send a spacecraft to another, why send humans to another world? And I say, well, why don't we just send your cell phone on your trip to Europe? And just have it take pictures, and then someone's in your cell phone home, and it you've got lots of pictures. You send a robot to do your traveling for you, and I think, you know, who knows what purpose we'll find, but I think it's more about the avoiding of everybody dying first than the do we really have meaning in this world where everything is really easy to do. I mean, that seems okay to me. That seems.
Right.
Survivable.
And we have specific problems I would love to solve. So aging is one, probably number one problem, but I feel like we can solve it using narrow tools. We solved protein folding using narrow tools. We can do the same with fully understanding human genome, trying to figure out, okay, this loop here, instead of 100 years, let's set it to infinite loop, but no cancer. Okay, now we got aging. Beautiful. We don't need to create general superintelligence to accomplish that. This is dangerous. We don't know how to control it. We don't know how it impacts every aspect of our life. We suspect it makes us unnecessary. It's a replacement for humanity, not an addition, not a tool. Whereas narrow systems are tools. We can use them to achieve our goals. You want to live longer? You want to be healthier? We can do that.
Can we, though? I mean, like some of the challenges that humanity faces will require some kind of, is sufficient to use a narrow tool to be able to get us to the goal, protein folding, whatever. But others, maybe the minimum sufficient level of technology is something that is more generalized, more artificial superintelligence. And we don't know in advance which ones are going to be the ones that are, you know, yeah, all you needed to do was use a hammer as opposed to a nuclear weapon. And it's only after the fact. I mean, doesn't sort of your perspective, it's either all or nothing?
So
hopefully nothing.
So I think we can get majority of benefits, like 99% of benefits from useful tools, not from general superintelligence. There are things which are well beyond our capability where we would need general superintelligence. And if that turns out to be that, okay, 100 years later, we all live forever, we got all the free stuff we ever wanted, there is something else we need, and we figured out how to do it safely, sure, why not? I'm just saying, let's not make it in the next 5 years where we have no idea how to control it.
Yeah, yeah. But I think this sort of leads, I mean, you have said that you are 99.999%, you know, if it's time independent, if you go all the way out to the end of history, that we will have created a runaway AI at some point in the future. And so I wonder, you know, if you're looking at trying to create narrow AI, aren't you just sort of delaying the time outcome that we stumble across the ASI?
Yeah, delaying is all we got. That's the pause AI movement who got us in touch, right? We say, we don't know how to do it in 2 years. Give us 200 years. Maybe we'll come up with something clever.
Yeah. So that's alignment. And then I think the other argument that people have is that that AI doesn't want anything. Like, how can we say that it will be dangerous, we have agentic behavior? It's just a technology. It's fancy autocomplete. There's no way that it can want a thing and like the destruction of humanity.
Right. So it doesn't have to want anything. You set goals you want. Let's pretend like you know how to do that. But then to get to any goal state, there are infinitely many paths to get there. Some of those paths are very dangerous. They have bad side effects. Simple examples people always talk about, climate change. We need to solve climate change. Well, maybe one solution is to get rid of humanity. We have a polluting ones. It's obvious to me and you that that's not what we had in mind, but it's just as reasonable of a solution for someone who's not biased to be pro-human.
But why is getting rid of humanity the kind of capability that an artificial intelligence might have, not to mention an idea that would occur to it to solve the goal?
Well, it is kind of the first solution that comes to mind. You have this species which is polluting. You want to stop pollution, so it seems pretty natural. Now, if we're talking about superintelligence, it's obviously capable of developing weapons, developing synthetic viruses, nanotech, so it wouldn't be difficult to accomplish that if that's what a superintelligence decided was needed to happen. Now, it doesn't mean it will happen. It just, in computer science, we usually look at worst case scenario in cryptography and all sorts of applications. You're trying to see what's the worst that can happen. If you prepare for that and something better happens, you're fine. You prepared.
So Neil deGrasse Tyson, one of my fellow space science communicators, he said the simple solution is you just turn it off. Why can't we just turn it off?
Can you turn off a computer virus if you don't like it? Can you turn off Bitcoin network if you're tired of it? There are certain things which you can no longer turn off, either because they are too distributed or we depend on them. That's assuming it doesn't use its superior intelligence to predict you're going to try to turn it off and will turn you off first.
So there's a very famous quote by Eliezer Yudkowsky. He says that the problem, we talk about sort of the comparison between artificial intelligence and nuclear weapons. We haven't had we haven't had a war with nuclear weapons so far. And he says, the problem with AI is it's a machine that spits out gold until it lights the atmosphere on fire. So are we now rushing headlong into the spits out gold phase of this process?
We are. And there is a whole accelerationist movement who says, it might take 2 years or 4 years. It's too long. We need to expedite this process. We need to get there sooner. I don't get it, but I guess there is a lot of people who feel it's too long anyways.
Well, I don't to like take on their mindset. I mean, yeah, I don't get it either. I can't think of a way that speeding up, like even with nuclear weapons, I mean, maybe if you need to defend yourself against a coming threat, like if the aliens are coming, then yeah, we need to develop a super weapon or we're gone.
If you have another clock ticking, like you have cancer, you have a year left to live and like superintelligence is your only chance, I can kind of get it. Okay, you need to get there, but the rest of us are coming along for a ride.
Yeah, exactly. So I want to talk about the pause AI movement. I mean, where are we at? Because we saw several months ago a huge collection of thinkers and computer scientists and executives and a lot of people, very influential, said we should slow down, we should pause. What were they hoping for as a pause?
Get more time. Unfortunately, they asked specifically for that specific amount of time, not something based on capabilities. It doesn't make sense to ask for 6 months or 2 years. You want to say, until we can do the following, do not make it more advanced. If I cannot explain how it works, I cannot predict what it's going to do. I have no control proposals. I have no patents, no papers, nothing about how do you control superintelligent machines. do not cross that line. Do not train a bigger, more capable model.
And what happened?
We trained a bigger, more capable model. We made it open source. We basically, every time there is a junction, we can make a decision. We decide what would make this more dangerous, and we go that way.
Right. The Paws AI movement reached out to me. Is there like another Paws? Are people going to call for another Paws?
It's an ongoing process. It basically saying, please stop making them more dangerous while you're not making progress on safety. This just doesn't impact anyone.
So, I mean, a lot of people talked about it, and a lot of people, I mean, it was from ridicule to concern. Do you feel like, as you talk to people, the concern is growing? Because I think when you talk to regular people and you sort of ask them about what they think about this technology, they think that's kind of scary. And I think a pause makes sense. Like, let's slow down. I'm not seeing the benefits in my daily life, and I can definitely understand the consequences. But yet the people who are influential in this are just rushing forward for competitive reasons. Do you feel that there is like a growing acceptance or siding with the pause? I mean, there's interesting laws that are coming on board, both in, you know, California and Europe. So people are taking it somewhat seriously.
So there is both growth and pause movement and growth and accelerationist movement. I think both are doing really well in terms of recruiting new members. People who are not experts, just normal people on the street, they kind of understand intuitively, so wait, you're creating something that will do my job, and you're saying you don't know how it works. We're just going to release it. Maybe don't. I like my job. I don't know what else it's going to do, so they're more cautious. The people who are pushing this forward, they all on record, previously, before we became CEOs, are saying, this is going to kill everyone. This is super dangerous. They have high P-doom, but because of this game dynamic, they're all in this prisoner dilemma situation. They're forced to continue, or they're going to lose to competitors. And they're basically saying, yeah, it's probably going to kill everyone, but it's better if it's our AI, not Chinese AI or AI from a competing company.
And that argument that if we stop, then the Chinese will continue. It seems to me like they are willing to be as rational, probably as rational about it as the West is. Do you know if there's like support for Paws AI in places like China?
There is a movement on bringing Chinese and American scientists together to kind of discuss this and get the governments to maybe be more responsible. And from what I heard publicly, Chinese government is open to this idea of taking it seriously, but I don't have any insider information.
I mean, I think at this point, obviously, there's censorship issues that they're dealing with the output of the autocorrect side of the way the models work, which makes them a little difficult for them to manage. So I'm sure for them, being able to slow down to give these things, I don't know, their computer scientists a chance to rein them in a little better would probably
be useful. It's the same problem for Americans and for Chinese. They just want to censor different type of output, but all of them are basically putting filters on top of what the language model says.
But all hope is not lost. I mean, on the alignment side, on the safety side, there's been really interesting discoveries that have been made. People have been able to actually go into the giant matrix that the model is contained within and start to make tweak changes, figure out where it remembers things, learn things. So on the safety side, do you think that there is productive work that is being made, just sort of not at the same pace as the acceleration of the capabilities?
I think so. So it's very slow. We figured out what this neuron does, what this cluster of neurons does. We can replace piece of memory, kind of what we see with neuroscience in humans. But at the same time, the models are increasing 10x every time in complexity. So at some point, you hit this level where a single human cannot comprehend the explanation, even if it's given. It's just too complex. So you need teams of people with specialization. I'm just looking at the left side of your brain. I'm looking at this cluster. So they don't see the whole picture. They see parts. And the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
But like, what kind of resources are being dedicated to this problem? If you looked at a place like Anthropic or OpenAI or even universities.
They are good resources, but they're tiny in comparison to what we give to development. So if I give $1 billion towards more capable systems, there is, I don't know, 10 million, don't quote me on that, towards safety. The problem is development knows how to convert dollars into more IQ points. They can scale it to where it's more capable. Nobody knows how to convert dollars into safety directly, where just give me, you know, this amount of money and I have it safe. Whereas if you give me this amount of money, I can get to AGI.
Right. Like, where are the safety scaling laws?
I think it's pretty static, constant. I haven't seen a major breakthrough.
Yeah, yeah. And that if you scale up your data cluster and consume more energy, it doesn't get you faster safety.
It doesn't get you more safety, and the systems become different. They go from those tools, which are subhuman intelligence, and we can inspect and be maybe a human in a loop to regulate them, to where they will become smarter than us, and you can no longer even figure out if it is a problem.
So another concern that people have is that this is all a distraction, that people are being concerned about the existential safety of this technology as a way to obfuscate the actual harm that's being caused in terms of algorithms choosing whether you get to get a bank loan or whether you are able to get a job and that kind of thing. And so do you think those short-term fears of artificial intelligence, just as it starting to force society into new directions, are well-founded? Is this...
So people work on what they can work on. Nobody can work on superintelligence safety because A, we don't have superintelligence system yet, and B, we have no idea how to do it, how to even start. So they go and they work on something they understand, bias and algorithms. Okay, I understand that. I need to get outputs to be equal for all demographics. That's why we see so much research on it. Is this the most important problem? It depends on what you compare it to. If we are right and we are very close to systems capable of killing everyone, losing your job is less important. If this is all not real, then yeah, of course, those are real problems. Majority of researchers work on those problems, copyright issues, bias, you know, trying to get algorithms to not hallucinate, deep fakes, things of that nature.
So as opposed to just raw scale, like when we talk about safety, it's that those kinds of issues that most people are like, most of the researchers who are working on safety are, let's make sure this thing can't be used for deepfakes, as opposed to let's make sure this thing doesn't, you know, have power seeking behavior or is attempting to deceive itself, us, or whatever.
I would guess as raw numbers, just number of people working on different aspects. Yes, absolutely.
But I mean, I think in computer science, like in development, when you're developing software, bugs are just part of the process. You get bugs and you deal with the bugs. And the problem is that if we only get one shot at this and we get it wrong, then we can't debug it after the fact. But aren't these societal issues a sort of canary in the coal mine opportunity for us to see how this stuff can go wrong and how difficult it is for us to respond to it?
It should be. There are mathematical proofs showing you cannot remove all bias. It's impossible. We know that at the limit, you cannot tell if something is fake or real. If you could, the algorithm would use that to create a better fake. So yeah. All these problems at the limit are impossible to solve. We're solving special cases where we can kind of shift biases or kind of rely on some other information to figure out whatever something is real or not. But that's the lesson here. We had this problem since the beginning. We still have them. Every model released so far was jailbroken, said something inappropriate. Whatever it is they tried to prevent happened.
Is safety actually a problem as well, because if you do a lot of work on safety, and ideally you want to share the knowledge on the safety that you're doing, aren't you also just providing a blueprint to how to make the model unsafe?
I don't know if it's that direct, but historically we do see that at least safety-directed work resulted in more capabilities. OpenAI was a safety project. Anthropic is a safety project.
But more like, if you show someone how to make a model, like if you say, okay, finally, we have decoded GPT-2 thanks to the help of GPT-5, and we understand exactly how every single neuron is firing in this thing. Doesn't that give a person who wants to then make a bad model a blueprint on how, where and how to put, you know, change the weights in the model to get what they want?
Absolutely. So that would be malevolent use, and that's something I write about. There is no solutions for insider malevolent use, for taking open source models and modifying them. But worse yet, if you make model fully transparent, now the AI itself can engage in recursive self-improvement, improving itself beyond what was released. So you release a very safe, reliable model, but it goes and obtains capabilities, general capabilities you haven't planned for it.
But I guess I wonder, isn't safety just another form of acceleration?
You can see any dual-use technology as benefiting both. Now, I guess there could be breakthroughs in safety which do not directly lead to capability to remove that safer nature of the system. There is some proposals for working on encrypted models, models where you don't fully understand by design what they are accomplishing. But so far, I would say everything we've seen done for safety helped capabilities as much or more.
Yeah. Yeah. And that if you have this sort of, if safety is complete, like they say, we did it. We made a model that is perfectly, completely safe because we understand exactly how it works. Every neuron, every piece, we know how to influence it. We know how to make the model do exactly what we want and be as safe as we need it to be. Then someone else can go, ooh, I can make the model exactly as malevolent as I need it to be, or as exactly as powerful or power-seeking, agentic, obscure as required. And so it's
right. So that goes back to our alignment. Who are we aligning with? If you have this friendly superintelligence, who is it friendly towards? Dictatorships, enemy nations, everyone gets corrupt with enough power.
Already, I feel like the current crop of artificial intelligence tools, the OpenAI, the Claude AI, they're good enough, and we would be digesting the capabilities in their current form for decades, probably, to make them better, more useful, without making them smarter. Without, you know, if we didn't do any more algorithmic improvements, any more, give them more compute, we could transform society in various ways, good and bad. Is there, you know, people are going to keep rushing forward. People are talking about $1 billion runs. People are talking about $100 billion runs for compute to scale things up by multiple orders of magnitude. Obviously, we want to pause. Do you think that there is going to be a point where we get a wake-up call and we go, okay, that's enough, that's enough?
Then we started this work over a decade ago. All the things we talked about as like, this is a red line, you should not cross it, we ignored them completely. We open sourced everything. We gave access to everyone who wants it. We connected it to internet immediately. We connected it to tools. There are people now connecting it to physical devices, robot bodies. So it doesn't seem there is any specific event which will make everyone go, let's stop. I collected AI accidents through history. There is lots of them. They get more involved, more impactful, but we didn't stop research. In fact, I had a paper where I said some people proposed having accidents on purpose to kind of serve as a red flag, set this safety in motion. And I said, it's not going to work. People are just going to go, look, it only killed five people. This is nothing. Billions of us are benefiting. So there is really nothing specific that can happen where everyone just go, yep, we need to be done with it.
And that's back to that, the machine spits out gold part of this conversation, that you make it open source, then anybody can tinker with it. You make it publicly available, then anybody can use it, not just elite researchers. You connect it to the internet so they can get access to the latest information. Are there any red lines left?
I mean, it's kind of like with figuring out if we got AGI or not. What we have right now, if you described it to a researcher in AI 15 years ago, they'd be like, oh, you have AGI. That thing does thousands of tasks in different domains without explicitly being trained. You got it. You solved it. How are you doing? And people are saying, oh, it's an Excel spreadsheet with extra steps. It's nothing. So we can't even figure out if capabilities are at a certain level. It's much harder to figure out, well, what are the dangerous capabilities now? What can it do? And again, I think people will figure out ways to use it to hack, to commit financial crimes, to manipulate elections, and none of it's going to make a difference.
I think if you describe that as a red line, then our researchers are literally identifying the parts where it isn't AGI yet, and they're trying to solve that if that's the next red line, is let's not cross AGI, or self-improvement, maybe. I mean, that's already, OpenAI has already said that they've been using their latest version to help write software to improve the actual model itself. It's just not able
to. So there's definitely self-improvement. It's not recursive. It doesn't go more than one or two steps. So that's good. But again, right. If it starts that, they'll be super happy. They can hire less people.
Yes. Yeah. And so each one of these red lines, you wouldn't be worried about them if people weren't going to rush headlong towards them.
Everything we always said, like, okay, it's a tool. As long as it's not an agent, we should be okay. Next day, somebody puts a wrapper around the tool. Now it's an agent seeking malevolent goals. Like, it happens in 24 hours after release of a model.
Yeah. I remember there was someone tried to make a bot that tried to destroy the world, and it wasn't very effective. But, you know, that's a red line, and people are going to try and figure out how to make that thing more effective. Maybe there is. I mean, I know there are.
And again, we're kind of assuming that people are good and normal. The number of crazy people is just so underestimated. A completely insane psychopaths, religious cults, doomsday. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, and I think in the past, you had the resources of a nation state to be able to make a nuclear weapon to begin nuclear war, or you needed the resources of a state to be able to make a bioweapon or some kind of malevolent artificial intelligence. But the tools are allowing smaller and smaller groups to get their hands on these kinds of existential threats.
It's getting cheaper for synthetic biology, for AI. It still looks like we'll need like $1 trillion center to train truly a super intelligent model, but that gets cheaper every year.
But doesn't that mean that sort of all pathways are inevitably leading to that button analogy that I gave you earlier on? That, yeah, it's $1 trillion today. We follow Moore's law, which is gone crazy at this point. In 10 years, it's $1 million. And in 15 years, it's $100 to train an ASI that does exactly what you want.
I have a pretty high doom prediction level. So yes, I agree with you.
I know it's like 99.99%. I oscillate, but you know. What possible response is there to handing out doom buttons to every human on Earth?
So to me, it seems logical that if we just want the benefit, we should concentrate on specific problems, get that benefit. I think tools we developed already, what we have today, is trillions of dollars if it's spread through the economy. There are so many jobs you can now automate, so much benefit you can get. It's not being fully deployed. So if the goal is to make money, the companies can still make money. We can still benefit from this technology. Again, in medical breakthroughs, we see every day there is more and more in terms of our ability to manipulate biological information. Just no reason to go all in on this. You have, you know, 30, 40-year-old guys running those companies, rich people. Why would they want to risk everything? Maybe then they 80, 90 years old. Okay, we can talk about it. But right now it seems like they're making a bad decision in terms of self-interest.
But, I mean, I think about the kinds of even slight improvements that I want to write on code that I'm working on. And yet it feels like to really properly stop this process in its tracks, you would have to limit any development improvement at all, because you don't know if you're going to veer into technology that's potentially unsafe to humanity, that the implications of this are too great. That if I want to change a syntax error on my code, I would need to run it through the AI safety board.
Right. Then I definitely don't have solutions. I kind of described all the problems I discovered in my research. Then I started, I thought I'm going to find solutions to the problem and it's going to be glorious. But for everything I look at, explaining capability, predicting, monitoring, testing, there are strict limits, not just from computer science, but from mathematics, from political science, from economics, which we know about. And we published papers surveying 50 plus impossibility results. So I don't come to you saying this is a solution, please implement it. I'm describing the problem which is coming our way, but we're not doing anything about
it. I'm sure you're familiar with Robin Hanson's sort of arguments on this front. He, you know, he's the guy who came up with the great filter and grabby aliens, and I want to talk about that in a second. But he very much feels like we are evolving, and who are we to sort of define and decide what the future of humanity looks like? And it might very well be that it's going to be machines, in the same way that as we have children, we want our children to thrive and expect them to be different than who we are. I mean, are we being too conservative and saying, no, we've developed throughout all of human history, but stop right now, no further?
So I had a debate with Robin exactly on that topic. I think we spent an hour and a half trying to figure it out. I think the difference between our opinions is it's cool if it takes a million years for slight change where it's not noticeable. It's very different if tomorrow somebody comes and says, you are being replaced. You no longer work here because this bot now does this for 5 cents a month, and you no longer providing anything useful because you're not smart enough. So that's a fundamental shift, I think. You're going from gradual evolutionary process to direct replacement.
And so it's the pace of the change, of the transformation, of the doom.
I would compare it to being killed, kind of. You're no longer alive. They take you out and they replace you with someone else. So it's not you. You may be responsible for generating this replacement, but it's in no way, shape, or form. It's not your children, for sure. So there is no biological connection. We don't even know if consciousness in silicon is something meaningful to us. So it may not even be lights on. It's just automation replacing you.
With your killed analogy, it's sort of the difference between being killed and dying of old age.
What is the difference between the two?
No, that's what I'm saying. It's kind of like that. Like if it goes quickly, then it's kind of like being killed in a bus accident.
Yeah,
and if it goes slowly,
we're all dying. We know we're going to be dead, but then you get a diagnosis and they tell you it's not 40 years, it's 4 months. You feel bad. Yeah. That's kind of the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like that's the emotional heart of where this is coming from. My space fans have been listening to this, been sort of tolerating this conversation about existential crises. And I want to talk about space for a second here. Back to Robin Hanson, he describes this idea of grabby aliens, that when we look out into the universe, we should see expanding empires of alien civilizations that are reaching out at close to the speed of light to accumulate as many resources from the universe as they possibly can. That sounds like artificial intelligence. Like, it feels like the only kind of civilization that could expand at that speed is going to be one that's relying heavily on technology. And yet we don't see any of these things. What implications do you think that has for, you know, did all other civilizations successfully pause their AI?
So there could be many interesting answers. I like the simulation hypothesis one. This is a virtual world. They are testing specifically our ability to navigate this interesting period where technology hits A, our ability to create superintelligence, and B, our ability to create realistic simulations. And that's why it's limited in how realistic it is in terms of interacting with the rest of the universe. We don't see alien robots taking over.
So the fact that we don't see alien robots taking over vast swaths of space is one data point that we're living in a simulation?
No, but for other reasons, I think we are in a simulation. I can explain again, related to AI safety and superintelligence. And if they wanted to experiment on this specific aspect of our development, you wouldn't want to introduce additional variables of alien invasion that would just complicate the scenarios.
Right. But from a Bayesian standpoint, then you could say, well, you know, the fact that we don't see this thing allows us to update our credence and say, actually, okay, maybe it's more likely that we're living in that simulation, that we would anticipate to see that the alien empires out there in space. So
I can, you know, see that. I get to pretty close to certainty with our arguments, so I never thought about that. But yeah, you can definitely see it as an additional the cleanliness of our experiment.
I don't know if you've ever read the book Accelerando by Charles Strauss. It's a great book and sort of really beautifully captures what accelerating technological advancement feels like, going from what is essentially now or like a little in the past, just moving through generation to generation of advancing technology. And his perspective is that you, for a computer, the speed of light is everything. You know, you want to build your things out of computronium. The computers want to be able to communicating at the speed of light. And that as you get to a certain size, the lag kills you. That if you're having to spend a day to send signals back and forth between your neurons, that's unacceptable. There is a size that a computer will no longer want to consider to be a single individual. And to then travel to other star systems would be unimaginable, because you're essentially sending your competitors out to other star systems to come back and compete with you. So I don't know if there's any kind of limit. Is there a, you know, if we do fall into this runaway AI doom loop, is there a limit?
Well, that's interesting. I heard arguments like that. So people talk about Jupiter brains and getting bigger and bigger. At some point, the components are no longer communicating in real time. So it kind of creates multiple superintelligences possibly competing. It seems that very small brains not subject to speed of light limits would be vastly superior to human intelligence. So for us, they would look as superintelligent as anything else, which could be bigger. So I'm not even sure there is a need to grow to that size to be a problem for us in terms of safety.
Well, I'm not more concerned about it from a perspective of safety, but more a why don't we see this, right? That we don't look out into the universe and see Dyson swarms surrounding every star in the Milky Way. We see stars. You know, it's the equivalent of us looking out and seeing wilderness. We look around. You know, you get dropped off in the middle of almost anywhere on Earth, and you're just going to look around and see trees and animals and shrubs and rocks. And from our perspective, when we look out into the universe, we see stars and asteroids that haven't been enclosed in Dyson swarms and crunched up to be turned into self-replicating robot factories and so on and so forth. And so,
so I think it depends on how you look at it. So some people argue that panspermia theory is the right one, and we have a Dyson sphere sent out. We have a robot colonizing this planet for the whoever sends those biological robots out. So you see exactly what you wanted to see.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. So for people who are, you know, I think for a lot of people who listen to this interview, they're going to roll their eyes and think, you know, they came up with a bunch of issues that we didn't think of to talk about. But for a certain subset, they're going to want to find out more, take action, get involved. How do you recommend that people who are concerned about where the technology is going, what's the best way for them to get involved?
So again, I don't have a specific thing I need everyone to do. I'm not saying like run out and destroy processors or anything. It helps if you understand what the issues are. So when people have conversation, you at least understand, is this meaningful? Are they really talking about a problem or not? So just read the latest research papers on a topic, popular books. Do you kind of see this as a meaningful problem? If so, maybe you can impact your politicians. They're unlikely to solve technical problems with legal solutions, but everything that kind of creates red tape and buys us more time is good. So I support all sorts of legislation to slow down this process. If the compute money goes to lawyers, we have a little more time. So that's the best I can suggest. Be informed. Vote for people who are not trying to get us there as soon as possible. Militarize this technology. I think that's good general heuristic.
I mean, we didn't even talk about the already militarization of this technology. I mean, we're seeing it play out in battlefields already, and that's just going to keep accelerating. Roman, I ask people this question sort of at the end of our interview, and yet I think we sort of know what you're obsessed with. What are you obsessed with?
So we talked about simulation. I have a paper about how to try to hack our simulation, how to escape from this virtual world and get to real information, real problems, the real answers to all the questions you had. So that's been a pretty interesting topic. Then superintelligence comes and you have nothing to contribute. Maybe it's because it's a limited world and you need something bigger to prove yourself.
So how do we hack the simulation?
You have to read the paper.
What? Come on.
I'm still here, so clearly I wasn't successful, but we are looking at some interesting directions. The connection to AI safety is that in 2011, 2012, we published a paper on how to box AI. If we create advanced AI, how can we contain it so it's not dangerous, limit learning, limit access to information, limit social interactions to prevent social engineering attacks? But the conclusion was that given enough time, it always finds a way to escape. If you're observing it, if you're monitoring it, it will figure out a way to hack you. So what if we are likewise in this test environment? Can we use superintelligence we are creating to escape from it? Can we get help from AI, maybe through quantum physics research, through some other means, to hack out? Now, there are two possibilities. One, it cannot escape. That means we can box it. We can make it safer. That's good for safety. Option two, we can escape. Are we getting to something interesting?
I mean, one of the assumptions of this whole idea is that base reality or whatever is the next level up in the simulation has anything to do with the reality that we experience. You know, a lot of people say, well, how can you simulate an entire universe? You would require a computer that's more complicated than the universe. But it's like, we can simulate Minecraft and you don't need to have a universe that's as complicated as Minecraft. You can have something that's more complicated. Do you think that, you know, if the simulation hypothesis does have legs, we would be able to tease out any information about what the next level of reality might be like?
Well, I think we can make certain deductions from what we observe. And again, I do think it's possible to hack in a certain sense. We can get information about outside world if it's not a perfect simulation. And we're starting to see quantum physics, some experiments really hinting at kind of the simulated digital nature of a lot of what we observe. So it's very early. People ask me, oh, did you manage to solve it? It was the first paper on a topic, right? It's unlikely that first paper in a field is also the last paper in a field. But I think it's something very interesting. The arguments for this being a simulation with us creating super intelligent machines, creating realistic virtual reality, becoming stronger than ever. We can literally get to the point where we are the creators of simulations. We can simulate point in time of this interview millions of times. Statistically, we would be more likely to be in one of those simulations. I can retroactively place us in one. Sounds more insane than usual, but this is really what we are starting to see. And then you have super intelligent machines thinking about humanity. They create realistic avatars, realistic agents in those simulations. You could be one of them.
It's interesting. I sort of think about, you know, like how do we live our life? You know, a lot of people are convinced by this, and yet I can't think of any way that I would live my life differently if I was living in a simulation. Like, maybe try to hack, maybe try to find a way out, just or at least make sure that they don't shut down the simulation. That would be
maybe you want it shut down. Maybe it's a very miserable simulation. Maybe it's much better outside. That's what you want to find out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's we know certain things about the simulators. Whatever we don't know is unknown, but we know they don't mind creating a world full of suffering, full of problems. They're cool with that. No one would allow experiment of that level on conscious beings here. We consider it inhumane, unethical, immoral, but here we are. So that's already telling you something about outside world.
Oh, it's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. That I mean, we have enough little insights. I mean, it goes back to almost religious philosophy that people have been arguing about for millennia.
If you go to a primitive tribe right now and tell them the content of this podcast, superintelligence, simulation, computer science in their language, return 10 generations later, they're going to have religious mythology. That's exactly what we see.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Well, Roman, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. I really appreciate it, and good luck with your attempts to slow down the pace of this. And I really hope that we do get to chat again in a few million years with our safe life extension technology.
In the real world.
Yeah, in the real world, in base reality, after we've hacked through the five layers to get there. That sounds great.
Thanks so much.
I hope you enjoyed this interview with Dr. Roman Yampolsky. Now, I'm going to give you some additional final thoughts, but first, I'd like to thank our patrons. Thanks to Abe Kingston, Adam Schaefer, Barry Lake Roofing, David Gilton, and David Matz, Dennis Alberti, Dustin Cable, Jeremy Mattern, Jim Burke, Jordan Young, Josh Schultz, Paul Robach, Spiderswap.io, Stephen Krasaki, Stephen Fowler-Munley, and Vlad Shiplin, who support us at the Master of the Universe level, and all of our other supporters on Patreon. So as you probably guessed from this interview, I do spend a lot of time thinking about potential hazards and risks of artificial intelligence. And, you know, not it's putting a lot of really crappy content on YouTube that people are having to sort of get through to be able to get to the proper science content that's out there. But also just like as we develop something that is potentially more intelligent than human beings and hope that we can control it at the same time. And we can't even agree on how we can control it. There are a lot of challenges and issues that we need to sit down and work through as a society at a global level. And we're not very good at this kind of thing. And so we've got to learn to work together to develop technology that is safe for us to progress as a species. And if we don't, then there are consequences. And hopefully the consequences won't be existential, but they might be. And so these are the times when I think humanity faces its greatest threats, and hopefully we'll be able to come out the other side with solving these and also becoming better as a species. And I can't wait for us to see what the outcomes, because if we can master this technology, then we get all those benefits. We get the extended lifespan. We get more fun and better science. So, but we have to stare this dragon in the eye and deal with it. All right. I hope you enjoyed the interview, and we'll see you next time.